Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 19, The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj, text number 14. Pita Parada Putraste Tadvi Vidvan Dvija Vatsala Swamayur Dvija Lingebhyo Devebhyo Dat Sa Yachitaha Pita Father, Parada Putra, the son of Maharaj Parada, Prahlada, Te Yor Tat Vidvan, although it is known to him, Dvidavatsalaha, still because of his affinity for Brahmins. Swam, his, ayu, duration of life, dvidalingyebhya, who address like brahmanas, devabhyaha, unto the demigods, adat, delivered, saha, he, yachitaha, being so requested. Translation or purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Your father, Virochana, the son of Maharaj Prahlad, was very affectionate towards brahmanas, although he knew very well that it was demigods who came to him in the dress of brahmanas. At their request, he delivered to them the duration of his life. Purport, Maharaj Virochana, Bali's father, was so pleased with the Brahmana community that even though he knew that those approaching him for charity were the demigods in the dress of Brahmanas, he nevertheless agreed to give it. So there's a continuation of Vamanadeva glorifying the ancestry of Bali Maharaj. Soften him up. So when he gets the three steps, Bali Maharaj will not be disappointed. And then try and take, well, maybe he should only give you two steps. Or maybe one would be better. We give you one step with one foot. In order to... So as I said before, this is a good technique. If you want to ask someone for something, first of all, spend the first 10 minutes flattering them. And then after them, spend 50 seconds asking them for whatever you want them. And then spend the rest of the time flattering them again. And if they don't give you what you want, then try the whole process over again. Until they finally give in. Text number 15. You have observed the principles followed by great personalities who are household or brahmanas, by your forefathers and by great heroes who are extremely famous for their exalted activities. So as we see, Brahmanadeva has to flatter Bali Maharaj because Bali Maharaj's spiritual master, Shukracharya, is now going to tell Bali Maharaj not to give charity, even three steps. Don't even give this Brahmana boy even three steps, because he's Vishnu, and those three steps he'll take everything. So Bali Maharaj, Vamanadeva has to flatter Bali Maharaj more than usual. After all, if he was only looking for three steps, only one or two words of praise would have been sufficient. Especially if someone owns the universe, to give up a few steps, unless they're excessively greedy, is not so difficult. But sometimes if you're dealing with someone like Duryodhana, Krishna went to Duryodhana asking for three villages. At that time, Duryodhana was ruling over more than what we perceive now as what's called the little part of Bhardvarsha that we're living in. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're living in Bhardvarsha, but only a part of Bhardvarsha. And Bhardvarsha is only one, I think there's 9 Varshas in Jambudvip. So we're just one part of Jambudvip and only one part of Bhardvarsha. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was ruling over at least the entire Bhardvarsha, if not more than that, at least part of Jambudvip. And Duryodhana wouldn't give the Pandavas, because he had inherited that he took the property as the emperor of the world, Duryodhana. He had an amazing amount of land, but he told Krishna, I won't even give. Krishna said, well, if you can't give them the kingdom back, or at least part of it, why don't you give them 3 villages that they can rule over, just villages? Maybe Ljubljana or something like that. And Duryodhana said, Ljubljana, no way. That's my prize. No, he said, I'm not going to give them even enough land to drive 3 pins into. I mean, that's greedy. Where's your kingdom? It's right there. Can you see it? No. I've got to get out my magnifying glass. Oh, wow. Beautiful piece of land. If I was an ant, I'd really prize this. And Bali Maharaj, he's going to give Vamadeva only 3 steps of land, but these are big steps, as we'll find out. And Shukracharya was, because he was quite intelligent, he is intelligent, therefore he knew that this is just a trick of the demigods. So it wasn't that Shukracharya is just a mean, old, nasty, Brahmin, greedy. But he also realized, well, all right, if the demigods want to trick us, then we should trick them too. He realized that this is just a guise. He's trying to deceive you. But Bali Maharaj wasn't deceived by Shukracharya either. That if Krishna comes and wants to cheat us, then we should be cheated. We should be happy Krishna has come to try to cheat us. Usually, if that's the only reason why he comes, at least he came. O King of the Daityas, from your majesty, who comes such a noble family and are able to give charity munificently, I ask only 3 paces of land to the measurement of my steps. Could have asked for 3 paces of land, said, no problem. And Bali Maharaj took 3 steps and said, here it is. Go for it. No, but Vamadeva said, to the measurement of my steps. Purport, Lord Vamadeva wanted 3 paces of land according to the measurement of his steps. He did not want more than necessary. But although he pretended to be an ordinary human child, he actually wanted the land comprising the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, just to show the prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O King, controller of the entire universe, although you are very magnificent and able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. Little cunning words here. I think it's necessary I take all the land from you. That's his definition of unnecessary. If a learned Brahmana takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. Here's an interesting purport. A Brahmana or a sannyasi is qualified to ask charity from others, but if he takes more than necessary, he is punishable. No one can use more of the Supreme Lord's property than necessary. Lord Vamanadeva indirectly indicated to Bali Maharaj that he was occupying more land than he needed. In the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. Did you ever hear that before? In the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. One acquires money extravagantly and also spends it extravagantly. Such activities are sinful. Well, all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all living beings who are sons of the Supreme Lord have the right to use the Supreme Father's property. But one cannot take more than necessary. This principle should especially be followed by brahmanas and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. Thus, Ramanadeva was an ideal beggar, for he asked only 3 paces of land. Of course, there's a difference between his footsteps and those of ordinary human beings. Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable prowess, can occupy the entire universe, including the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems, by the unlimited measurement of his footsteps. Because I don't think, well, anyhow, somehow or another, Krishna asked for that. Bali Maharaj, I don't think he was in charge of Brahmaloka. He wasn't in charge of Brahmaloka. He was in charge of up to the heavenly planets. So I guess that's what they mean by upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. That was his charge. But above the heavenly planets, there is the Maharaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Siddhaloka, and finally Brahmaloka. But as we'll find out, that Vamanadeva, in the form of Tarukra Maharaj, actually, with his first step, he pierced the covering of the universe, which is quite a big toenail. If you want to know how big the universe that we're living in is, the comparison, if you take one dot, just a dot on a page, and then you take a line 30 or 50 kilometers away from that dot, that dot represents the inner part of the universe that we're living in, and the line 50 kilometers away represents the coverings of the universe. So that's a big toenail. And then outside that, then you have the causal ocean, because we're happen to be floating on the causal ocean, or maybe sinking, depends on what kind of universe we're in. Any case, luckily we're airtight, so therefore we can still breathe. There's still some oxygen. Otherwise, could you imagine the causal ocean going through those layers and sinking into that one little dot? We'd definitely be swimming. We'd be underwater for a while. But under the causal ocean, which is, even if we had to go, it would be a nice way to go. If you're going to drown, you might as well drown in the Ganges. And here it mentions that one should not take more than one needs, because it's the cause of distress. So how is that possible? Everyone wants more than they need. Of course, what we need may be different. People have a different idea of what they need. Some people think that unless they live in a house with 25 rooms, they feel crowded. Others, they at least need 3 billion euros in the bank to feel safe. So there may be different conceptions of needing, but ultimately one doesn't really need that much as we usually think. But trying to get more, as Krishna says, Yadrit Shalava Shantusto, Dvanvatito Dimatsraha, Samaksidaval Siddhacha, Kribapinanabhajite. One who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is satisfied both in success and failure, is never entangled although performing work. So these are important instructions. Even they're not directly telling us how to meditate on Krishna, but they're giving us the ability to stop meditating on other things. It's like if you have, there's a gold bar on the street and you're holding, you know, your water bottle because you're thirsty. You see the gold bar, you think, well, it's either the gold bar or my water bottle. I can't give up my water bottle. I'm attached. Therefore, you don't have the ability to pick up the gold bar. So the first thing to do is someone saying, just drop the water bottle. Can't do it. So these instructions tell us how to drop our material attachment to illusion. It's only one instruction. That's in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna, he begins with, what's the first one? Nirashya yata chittatma tyaktva sarva purigraha kavilam kavilam karma nainam nathoti kilbisham. So the actual first one is, maybe this. Yasya sarve samarambha karma sankalpa vardita yaja. How do you pronounce it? Gagnagni yata gagnati dagdat karmanam tamahu pandita buddha. So yasya sarve samarambha, one whose every activity is devoid of desire for sense gratification. One is understood to be in full knowledge whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He said by sages, be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burnt up by the fire of perfect knowledge. So why do people want more than they need? Because they think that this will protect them in case of during scarcity. Of course, that's not disallowed completely. Because that's also considered part of need. When Rupa Goswami had a boatload full of coins, you may accuse, well, Rupa Goswami had a boatload full of coins. How much did he really need? I guess it was a small boat, though. So, and he divided his money up. He gave 50% in charity to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. He took 25% he gave to his relatives. And then he put aside 25% for his personal, for his needs. So, it is not that there is no need to have some security. But, how much security do you need? As Harad Hughes, who is the richest man in the world, who had the equivalent of $100 billion nowadays, when he was asked, now that you have all this money, what do you want? And his reply is, I want more money. I want more and more. There's no end to what I want. So, yasya sarve samarambha karma sankalpa vardita gyanagni dagda karmanam tamahu pandita buddha. So this word, jnana agni, the fire of perfect knowledge. So knowledge, of course, means ultimately to become Krishna conscious. And in the presence of Krishna, all our material desires will go away because we're situated in the spiritual energy where we feel complete bliss and we're living in eternity. And when you're living in eternity, what kind of security you're going to get from some temporary object here? Long after this universe is, we say bye-bye to the universe, long after the dissolution of the universe, we'll still be around. Hopefully we won't be attached to the universe floating in the causal ocean. Where did my universe go? I want to go back. I left my wallet there. No, we're all eternal, and therefore one who actually realizes his eternality, or one is actually situated in transcendental bliss and Krishna consciousness, the fleeting material world has no attraction. Just like, as I said before, if you're going to a moving river and you put your hand in and say, this water is mine, the water that you just had in your hand just passed you by. How can you be attached to that water? It's downstream. You're never going to get it back. It's way past you. No matter what water you grab, it's going to disappear. So no matter what we grab onto the material world, ultimately, when we leave this body, we disappear. And whatever we thought was ours, it's always disappearing. It's always coming and going like a flowing river. So again, Agni, one has actual knowledge, burns to ashes these illusion, especially the delusion. And when the delusion's gone, then the attraction for lust, anger, greed, they also go away. And the knowledge, again, Agni, intelligence, spiritual intelligence. When we have spiritual intelligence, then our memory comes back, and our delusion goes away, and then naturally lust, anger, and greed disappear also. So hearing and getting spiritual intelligence, by hearing and practicing Krishna consciousness, when Krishna is pleased and he gives us didami, buddhi, yogam, tam, he gives us intelligence by which we can come to him, then all our problems are solved. Then no longer will we bothered by abhinivesita, by the fear of death and all the other anxieties that go along with it. Nor are we subjected to attachment and aversion, according to the whimsical nature of the mind. Nor are we covered by false ego, asmita. Instead of avidya, we have real knowledge, so therefore jnanagni is so precious, but so undervalued in this modern society. Instead, ignorance is lauded. People want to be, I don't know if they want to be cheated consciously, but they're being cheated by so much misinformation. And if you give people right information, they don't take it seriously. Matter of fact, we have a hard time taking it seriously too, but to speak of ordinary people. So Krishna keeps on glorifying jnana, jnanagni, that burns away our ignorance. Yasya sarve sava mamba karma sankalpa vardita jnanagni sarva karma tamahu pandita buddha. So such a person is considered to be Buddha, intelligent. Nirasha yata chitatma tyakta sarva parigraha shariram kevalam karma korvam natniti kilvisham. Yakva karma palasam gam, karma sankalpa vardita, jnanagni sarva karmanam tamahu pandipa buddha. Tyakva karma palasam gam, niti trito nirashraha. Karma nyavi pravito pi narakinchit karoti saha. Banning all attachment to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, performs no fruitive action, though engaged in all kinds of undertaking. So our real goal is to be Krishna conscious. If we're Krishna conscious, we won't become attached to this, the results of our activities. Otherwise, we take shelter of the results of our activities. Everyone has some idea, I'm working, I'm going to get this, and this is going to help me in this way. But ultimately, everything in this material world can't help us at the time of death, especially. We may need something, and Krishna may supply it. We may have to work for it, and Krishna may give it to us. But ultimately, just going after the results of our work for some, thinking that this will give me shelter, the actual thing that will give us shelter is to become conscious of Krishna. And therefore, we should endeavor, while we're struggling in the material world, to also become conscious of Krishna. We can't give up struggling, but we should give up the idea that that's the only purpose of life, is to struggle for material existence. Nirasha yeti chetatma tyakta sara prigraha shairam kevalam karma korvam napni kilbisham. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all attachment to the results, all proprietorship of his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working is not affected by sinful reactions. So it's not that, yes. That's 21 of chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita, text 21. So it's not that sinful reactions may not come, just like Prabhupada gives the example, the fan is turning, and you pull the fan out, the plug out, but the fan will keep on turning. So you complain, well, I pulled the plug out. Why is the fan still turning? Because that's the nature of a fan. It keeps on turning, but it'll slow down. And after some time, it'll stop. So similarly, if we unplug the source of the power for our sinful activities, then the reactions may keep on going. They'll slow down after some time, but they still may be there. But we have to tolerate. We have to tolerate them. And at the same time, try to fix the consciousness on Krishna. That's the best way of tolerating. If we're, as much as we can actually remember Krishna, whether it just be his name or his form or his quality or his pastimes, the more we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the more we become aloof from the material existence, which the whole material existence is just a reaction to our sinful activities. We may be proud of our reactions, but that's all it is. I'm having a nice reaction. What about you? You're a lousy prisoner. I'm a good one. You're a bad prisoner. I'm an exemplary one. And finally, one who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality, does not envy, satisfied both in success and failure, is never entangled although performing action. And then Krishna will eventually say, as the verses go on, he'll say that if you were actually develop this consciousness, what would be the reward? Everything we'll look at will remind us of Krishna. We'll be able to actually experience how everything and everyone is non-different from Krishna, has the same spiritual quality that Krishna has, and we'll always be in bliss, taking transcendental pleasure in any circumstances. Even in the material world, everything will become Krishna-ized. And everything will be seen as a sacrifice to Krishna, as a yajna. Everything we do will be a sacrifice for Vishnu. And therefore we'll be in full consciousness of Krishna. We'll see Krishna everywhere, and we'll see everything as Krishna's energy, as beautiful as Krishna is. Not quite as beautiful, but anyhow, simultaneously one but different from Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Thank you, Maharaj. So I can, you know, sometimes I have a desire to get something, just like I see some, you know, some good upper clothing, and I said, oh, I think I should have one, you know. And then after 3 days, Krishna sent so much, people just brought to me that it's too much, you know. I don't say no, you don't give me, you know, they just bring three new things, so then I give them away. But, so what does it mean that things come to our own accord, this is the verse that, what does it mean of its own accord? How this?
It means you didn't really have to endeavor so much for it.
Things just can come and...
Yeah. I mean, how much our endeavor actually brings things anyhow? So Krishna is the one who's sending everything. He's the one who's moving the sun. He can move a piece of clothing around too. The thing is, we think we're responsible for everything. We don't see the connection with Krishna. Therefore, we don't appreciate what we get sometimes because we don't realize Krishna is giving it to us. We think it just kind of like floated in out of nowhere. I remember one time I was doing book distribution in downtown Melbourne. I used to distribute books there quite regularly. And I was trying to decide whether I should buy new shoes. I mean, my shoes were quite old. But I didn't want to spend the money. But then I decided, all right, you know, I have to do something, you know, it's good for my service. So I bought some new shoes. And they cost some money. And then I went out of the shoe store, and floating down the street were three $100 bills. So I had to make some connection with Krishna. I mean, nothing ever like that had ever happened to me in my life, nor probably will ever happen again. But I could definitely directly see what Krishna decided, that he agreed with me, I needed new shoes. And believe me, I had an endeavor. I mean, I had to bend down to pick up the $100 bills, but it was worth the effort. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for lecture. I was wondering if I have this desire to save for old age, to take more than is needed now, but with the thinking that maybe at my old age I will need. Is that some kind of... it represents that I'm opposing resistance to surrender fully to Krishna, or...
Well, we have to use our intelligence. I mean, depends on how much Krishna conscious we are. If we actually saw Krishna in our heart and we asked him, what about my old age? He says, don't worry about it, I have it saved up for you already. But we're not on that level. And therefore, to make some arrangement for old age, to make it so that we're not agitated. I gave everything to the temple, and then they put me out in the street. It looks like I got old real quick. Now we have to use our intelligence so we can execute Krishna consciousness with a peaceful mind. But we have to have some limit. Not that I'm saving up for, so that in my old age I can live in a palace. Have five servants. So we have to have some reason too.
Right.
Krishna consciousness means some balance. So we're not that surrendered, we don't have that much faith that Krishna is going to protect us, that we artificially try to do something and it puts us in anxiety. I don't think Krishna is going to be very pleased with that. Keep on nagging Krishna. Oh, Hare Krishna, you know, I surrendered. When are you surrendering? Can you send me, you know, an insurance policy at least? So we surrender to Krishna, but according to our actual level of surrender. A little bit more perhaps, but not so foolish that we bother Krishna all the time. Are you really going to help me? Are you really going to help me? You know. And then you hear about someone who, you know, left the movement and he was in difficulty. Wow, look at that. What did you do, Krishna?
Thank you.
Yes.
We have some internet questions, Maharaj. Avadutarai Prabhu is asking, this is from memories of devotees. Srila Prabhupada said, if I don't forgive you, then Krishna will forgive you. And if Krishna does not, Radharani will. This statement goes a bit contradictory to one shloka which says, if the guru is angry, then Krishna cannot help. Here, if you bring Radha in the picture, the whole world should have been already saved. What do you think?
Where does it come from? I never heard this.
Doesn't say for any...
Well, then I don't think. Unless I know where it came from.
No.
Anything else?
That's one more. He's asking, so the toenail of Vamana was bigger than his whole body, that he could pierce the shells of the universe? That's a question. As per your calculation, 50 times bigger.
50 times? A lot more than 50 times. How it happens? I don't know. You have to. I wasn't there. I don't remember being there, so I don't know what happened. It doesn't explain. But Krishna did it. Otherwise, where did the Ganges come from? Doesn't definitely come from out of the of Delhi, the real Ganges. Have you ever bathed in the Ganges?
Yes.
The real Ganges? Mm-hmm. It's not an ordinary river, is it? Anything else? By the way, aparad means something against Radharani. So if you offend Radharani's devotees, Srimati Radharani's devotees, she's not pleased. It's not that you please Radharani. She says, oh, sure, go ahead and defend my devotees. No problem. No, that's what aparad means. So this idea that if Radharani, you know, you can defend devotees, you can defend Krishna, and somehow or another you can please Radharani, that's not possible. She's going to teach us. So the reactions we get are not just out of spite or out of maliciousness or out of revenge. It's to teach us so we can become proper servants of Krishna and his devotees. That's what Srimati Radharani wants. Not that she's pleased. She wants to see that Krishna is pleased and her devotees are pleased. Hvala, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.